Welcome, dear seekers of health, happiness, and harmonious cosmic humming, to Season 2 of The Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. I am Sabina Wilms, owner of Happy Goat Productions, in collaboration with Leo Locke, our self-proclaimed purveyor of multiple perspectives. Once again, we're here to bring you old and new stories about China's healing traditions and about capital M, medicine in heaven and on earth, and in the sweet spot in between. In a special twist for Season 2, we focus on second-generation immigrant Asian voices by, for, and about women in that sweet spot in between traditional Asian wisdom and contemporary Western embodiment. And yes, Leo and I do realize that we need help with this theme, since both Leo and I are first, not second generation immigrants in the US. He from Malaysia and I from Germany. And he's a guy and I'm not Asian. And that's why we have these wonderful, amazing, beautiful interview partners. So today, joining Leo and myself for our second episode on Season 2 is Chris Gonzalez, Chinese medicine practitioner and herbalist, whose personal experience of motherhood has been influenced by her Korean mother and her Mexican mother-in-law. In addition to her clinical practice, she's also an educator offering gorgeous, evocative courses on topics like embodied menstruation, holistic breast care, the alchemy of perimenopause, the spirit-heart womb transformation through the somatic womb path, and sacred vaginal ecology, to name just some of her juicy offerings. Check out her gorgeous website, thewayofyin.com, to get a sense of the beauty she weaves into being in her corner of the universe. I first crossed paths with Chris when she consulted with me on the classical Chinese perspective on women's health and on Yangsheng. So that is naturally where our conversation with Leo started. It was really interesting and moving for the three of us to explore the fertile intersection between Chris's personal lived experience and her professional training in Chinese medicine. I feel like this has given her a special angle that is rooted firmly in a traditional Chinese perspective or Asian perspective, emphasizing dietetics, living in harmony with the external cycles of the seasons and internal cycles of the female body, and Yangsheng, literally nurturing life, or as she put it so beautifully, providing wellness instead of treating disease. Chris is such a beautiful spirit, internally and externally, and Leo and I walked away from this conversation feeling very lucky that she so generously shared her way of being in the world with us, and through this podcast, also with all of you, our dear listeners. May her deep commitment to helping women experience the cycles of their bodies fully and with ease, in harmony with the cycles of the seasons and the cosmos, may this inspire you as well to explore the power of this approach in your own life as well as in your clinical practice. Before we get into the conversation, I'd like to remind you to sign up for my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of new episodes and other offerings. And please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you can. And also check out the show notes if you want to learn more. Thank you. So I'm here today with my long-term partner, Leo Locke, who everybody knows at this point. And then today we have Kristen Gonzalez here, who has kindly agreed to join us after she and I had this wonderful conversation, I think about 2 weeks ago. You contacted me, if I remember this correctly, to ask about postpartum practices in traditional Chinese medicine. Was that right?
Yeah, postpartum practices, and then also I just wanted to deep dive with you about nourishing life tradition.
That's right.
And kind of pick your brain and your expertise on really good sources to kind of dig my teeth into further.
Yeah. So we were talking and as a result of that conversation, I was like, ooh, I want to be the one asking you questions. So here we are with Leo, and you are the perfect person for this conversation, for our new season for a podcast, which is about women's health, because you specialize in women's health. You are a Chinese medicine practitioner. You are a second generation. Your mom is from Korea, is Korean. So you are a second generation Korean person, and you're a Chinese medicine practitioner. And you're also, you have parents-in-law from Mexico, who, mm-hmm. So we are really interested in how knowledge about women's health. Leo and I want to, how do I say this? Women's health is a topic we both feel, and I think you agree, that has a huge potential in Chinese medicine that is largely untapped. And this is just me from my perspective. I feel like biomedicine, there are some blind spot in biomedicine compared to most other medical systems, medical paradigms that I'm familiar with as a medical anthropologist. Things like postpartum care, or the positive valuation, the attunement of menstruation, where biomedicine is not quite dropping the ball, but there are perspectives on these aspects of medicine where we as a global culture, wherever we are in the world, I feel like we could do a much better job of taking care of women. And that's why we are so interested in asking somebody like you, who is a professional Chinese medicine practitioner. So you have knowledge, professional knowledge that you've gained in your training as to what Chinese medicine can bring, and you have clinical experience in treating women's bodies. And at the same time, you're a mother, you're a daughter, you have given birth, and you have a mother from Korea and a mother-in-law from Mexico. So you are like perfect. And I think, I mean, Leo, here's where you jump in. But for me, it's like what I'm fascinated with is how do all these different areas of knowledge come together in your personal life, your professional life, in your experience, in your personal experience, and then in what you transmit to your patients. Sorry, I know that that's like, here, go for it. Leo, do you want to add to that, to give poor Chris even more to talk about?
I would like to hear, I would say, Chris, you can start wherever you are, whatever that comes to you. You can just start telling us about all of your stories, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, gosh, thank you so much for the invitation, first of all. I think a really good place to start is to just reiterate and acknowledge what you just mentioned about how our medicine really has something that people are craving, women are craving. And I guess I never really kind of put those pieces together in maybe my unique position to where I have, you know, these kind of traditions that have been passed on to me by my family, my mother in particular, my grandmother, my aunts, and so forth. But then also to really link my connection with my mother-in-law and how these traditions in some ways still kind of carry over, but then how being a Chinese medicine practitioner solidifies and creates almost like this real context and validity to these traditional practices, and also a way to communicate to the general public about how these traditions are not only traditions, but they're for the actual well-being of women. And I think that's kind of what's missing maybe in these other medical models, is that our medicine provides wellness for women. It's not only kind of approaching disease when it happens. It's the context of understanding our anatomy, our physiology, our life cycles, and providing like a model for wellness, really. And so I think the bridging of all of that is super fascinating, encouraging, and I feel like it brings me so much hope, honestly. Yeah.
See, this is why I wanted to Leo to be a part of this, and I wanted Leo to hear this, because I think you have a clarity in that vision, like the way you just said that. That's just beautiful. Isn't that, Leo, doesn't that make you happy to hear that, just like that?
Yeah, I really resonate with one point that Chris brought up, which is the validation of these, because there seems to be these attitude in the general, like, global medicine, that biomedicine is the medicine. And every medical, other medical models are just cute little traditions that we honor and give space because of its cultural validity, not because of it has equal strength or even more conducive for promoting actual health and wellness.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So I really feel like it is time now for the world to hear these other voices and perspectives, and say that we also can contribute concretely and powerfully to the wellness of women all over the place. We're not cultural artifacts. Yeah, it's not cultural. You don't honor it just because it is politically correct, because it resonates with diversity. We honor it because it can really deliver. And it can really deliver sometimes even better than the current best practice in biomedicine. I think that is what I resonate to.
I think also a piece of that is how it's almost like these power dynamics that come into play. I feel like with our medicine, because it is, it empowers, I feel like, with the information that you share to your patients, to the public, like, hey, you have so much influence on your wellness. You're just not kind of succumbing to your anatomy and physiology, just, you know. I feel like what I hear a lot from my patients is, oh, I have to deal with this because I'm a woman. I feel like what our medicine does is it empowers, is like, well, because of your particular anatomy and physiology, this is how you can use it to your benefit. This is how you can kind of incorporate practices to actually consider your menstruation as a part of your health. Consider postpartum as a crucial piece in your wellness. Consider perimenopause and menopause as these pieces along the womb continuum, I like to call it, as a way to enhance your health. And it's not these things that, I think it's also the poetry of our medicine too, that really empowers a lot in, you know, how they call menopause the second spring. And here in the West, in many parts of the world, it's like, that's like the end of your life, essentially. It's like life is over at menopause, when, you know, our medicine kind of frames it, well, no, actually, this is the first, this is like the entrance into the second half of your life, you know, the second spring. And I think that's what resonates with me most about our medicine, is that it provides a different perspective on our experience as women, where we're seeming to get like a single kind of perspective, where we just have to deal with painful periods. We have to, you know, recruit ourselves postpartum and get back to our bodies, you know, being slimmer and, you know, yeah. And, you know, all those kinds of, cultural things here in the West that we are bombarded with. So I think there's such a, an opportunity to share with the public that there's a different way. Yeah.
To me, what just came up when you were describing that is the importance of reframing the embodied experience of the reproductive cycle, where menstruation can be seen as a negative thing that needs to be, you know, hidden away, or even suppressed with the pill if you're an athlete or whatever, you know, if you're a young woman. It's like this huge inconvenience, it's this embarrassment, it's painful, you cover up the symptoms with a pill, whatever. Whereas in Chinese medicine, if it's painful, it's that pain is defined as a pathology. It's not supposed to be painful, whereas a biomedical doctor will just give you ibuprofen and say, oh, it's just part of being a woman. It's like, no, that's not what Chinese medicine is like. And in my case, I'm going through the menopause thing. And it's like, if you have hot flashes or whatever it is, right? You guys, you know how to treat heat coming up. When you wake up in the middle of the night and all of a sudden you're heat, you're like, ooh, this is a symptom. Let me play with the, let me fine tune the body. Whereas a biomedical doctors or my neighbors and friends who are not Chinese medicine people, they're just like, oh man, going through menopause is just like, it's just awful. It's this awful experience. And it's such a different way of looking at it. I think you're absolutely right there. And I think there's such potential for Chinese medicine practitioners to change, yes, to help your patients alleviate their suffering, but also to completely reframe that experience for, and that's where I think that's Leo with your, I don't know, Leo, yeah, you might want to refresh everybody's memory here on the Bodhisattva math, because I love that expression. That you brought up a few podcast episodes ago. Where, what can we do? What can we talk about? How can we make this podcast, or how can you make your practice the most beneficial possible? How can we have the biggest impact? Leo, you want to?
I think you said it really well. The biggest impact with the least amount of effort.
So how is this, how did the first time you brought up the Bodhisattva math, Leo, how did this lead us to now doing a whole season on women's health? Can you spell it out again?
Yeah, I think here I would like to really invite Chris's, both her personal and professional experience with women, right? So for example, in my personal experience, there are cases where lots of women have menstrual pain issues or psycho-emotional turmoil or ups and downs around their menstrual cycle, right? A lot of times in Chinese medicine, we say, oh, some of it or a lot of it is due to some kind of circulation problem in the uterus, or what we call stagnation. And that's due to some of these women ingesting quite a bit of chilled and cold substances like smoothies in the morning upon waking. So if we can educate our patients about that one single thing, or not partaking in cold smoothies the first thing in the morning, or iced drinks during certain times of the month, that would totally prevent them or eliminate a huge part of their suffering around that issue. So that's what I meant by, you know, do very little, just a piece of advice, and then we can really prevent a lot of the sufferings from later on. So that's how I see it. I wonder what's Chris's experience in that regard.
Yes, I have so many stories to share. Oh gosh, where to start?
We love stories. Go for it.
So I think it, you know, in Chinese medicine, we talk all the time about how connected we are to nature. We are, in fact, nature. And this is where I love to start with my patients. In a way, like organically having them experience the seasons, for one. And so connecting them with what's called like inner seasons within their body. Because I feel like when we talk about seasons, it's something that all of us can sensorily connect to. And so one thing that I do with my patients is I kind of guide them through their menstrual cycle in reference to seasons. And so that they could, along the journey through the month, kind of pinpoint ways that they can help themselves kind of align to the rhythms of their own body through the language and the poetry of the seasons. And I feel like in that way, they are inspired that their bodies work in this way, but also it's so practical. It's like a practical application of Chinese medicine, and you're asking them to kind of pay attention and weave in these practices on their own. So I kind of, just for instance, you know, like winter time being the bleeding time, like what do you do during the winter? You rest during the winter time. And so you don't want to push too hard when you're bleeding. And so anything that you can do to just take it down a notch, not that you have to like not do anything at all. But what else do? You stay warm. You stay warm in the wintertime. You eat warm foods, soups and teas and porridges. And then you just kind of travel along the seasons. And so after your bleeding time comes, like right after your bleeding time is like pre-ovulation, which is like the spring. You feel kind of renewed. And so what kinds of activities are you know, likened to springtime? And then you can just kind of go around the seasons to summer, and premenstruation being like a likened to autumn. So when I feel like when you help them see that they are actually nature embodied, it helps them kind of instill these practices. And it, to me, my experience is that they become really inspired that their bodies work in that way. Yeah. So that's one story.
So do you want to tell us another story, or do you want to tell us, you got another story? Let's hear another story.
Well, I think also too, I love context. I love sharing information in a way where people feel that it is their story. And so I think that's what Chinese medicine does, because there was such like a focus on observation of how nature works and how humans interact with nature. So I think another really beautiful and useful way is to tell them about their 7-year cycles. Yeah, I think that's not only for the practitioner. I think that women and men learning about their year cycles, either the 7 or the 8, helped to bring so much context to their experience. So kind of in the same way, I kind of lay out their life cycles according to the seasons. And, you know, that you're kind of different throughout your whole lifetime. And so we're not the same our whole lives. And so, you know, it's kind of futile to try and strive to be in your 20s forever, because your body changes and blood and qi changes, your gene changes. And so it's a way for them to meet themselves where they are, to also kind of reflect back on past 7-year cycles, and then almost in a way kind of take pause in the present moment. It's like, okay, well, how do I want to live out the rest of my 7-year life cycles? Yeah, so I like to also kind of help bring that context into their lives as well, seeing their lives through the lens of the 7-year life cycles. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. I really resonate with your metaphor and your perspective of talking about cycles and fluctuations, because I think a lot of times, not just in modern biomedicine, but also in the global health culture as a whole, there seems to be this fixation on a single baseline, which is the entire advertising, entire healthcare culture, everything seems to be revolved around people in their 20s, and especially male in their early 20s. That seems to be the unspoken golden standard behind the narrative of everything. Everything seems to be a subtle or not so subtle reminder of you are too far and you have lost the vitality of the 20s. And how are we going to try to get you back to that? So to me, that's kind of my perception. It seems to be this whole entire health and medical culture has this unspoken tune to it, right? But in your way of talking about Chinese medicine and how you educate patients, you really expanded this idea of we can be different in different lifetimes, in different cycles of our lives, and in different season in women of your menstrual cycle and journey. Right, it's a beautiful undulating and circular movement, rather than this just linear, constant, number-based reading, robotic, artificial, number calculation view of a healthcare. How many push-ups can you do? Hmm. Right? What's your blood pressure number? What's your, blood glucose level? I mean, everything is so robotic. Everything is so number-oriented, performance-oriented.
Data.
And you're absolutely right that the norm in biomedicine, I mean, this is me as a medical historian speaking, that the norm in the history of Western medicine has been the male body, and the female body was considered an aberration. It was away from the norm because women have uteruses, and uteruses make us hysterical. That's the origin. That's the etymology of the word hysterical. So that is absolutely the reality of my Western culture and Greek, Greco-Roman biomedicine. That's the root of biomedicine. So I think there is a really elemental difference that the world benefits from when we address that, and when we're like, these are the roots of the Western medical view of the human body, is that the male body is the norm and the female body is not. And then we contrast that to the way you just described it in the cycles and the alignment with nature and the fluidity. And yeah, it's
cyclical. It's like a cyclical nature to our bodies. Yeah.
So my curiosity maybe is the same as Sabine.
Probably.
How, thinking back about your mom from the Korean side, you know, tell us a bit more about what you learned from her and what she gets to transmit to you.
Well, gosh, I would say I didn't know that I was going to be a Chinese medicine practitioner when I was younger. But I do have to say that I'm such a sensory driven person. So I have these really core memories of really early influences of the medicine. I remember herbs being cooked in the house, you know, decoctions. My mom and our family in Korea visiting the local blind acupuncturist for treatments. My grandma wrapping my finger when I had a stomach ache to prick a Tingwell point, you know, or Jingwell point to help relieve heat in my body or something. I feel like it's always been kind of embedded in some way. But I didn't know that eventually that I would go to school for it and then start practicing the medicine. I think the other ways are, you know, food is such a big thing in Korean culture. And a lot of the foods are enjoyed seasonally. And so I feel like the seasons were such a big influence growing up too. I think in the peninsula of Korea, I think the most expensive food other than like meats are fruits. Fruit is so prized in Korea. You give gifts as fruits because they have their prime time and you can only get them in certain seasons. And so that just speaks to the seasonality and the reverence for seasonality and the reverence for agriculture, the way, you know, the way the things grow and the seasons for things. So I think those kind of key things really kind of embedded itself into my body somehow.
This makes me laugh because I remember when I was like 19 and I would go to Japan to play street music to pay for college. And I was pretty broke. And I'd walk through the grocery, through the big fancy department store in Tokyo. because they had free samples. They were giving out free samples everywhere. So it was actually an affordable way of getting a cheap meal. And they would sell individual strawberries for these outrageous prices. And I come from, and we've talked about the German strawberries, right, Leo? And from an area in Germany that has really good strawberries. And, you know, it's like mountains of strawberries. And you just go and you just pick strawberries like nothing. They're just overflowing. But I also I will not eat strawberries out of season. To this day, I was just looking at somebody who was, I saw somebody post something on social media or somewhere about a seasonal winter porridge. And I was like, oh, this is great. But then the photo had a strawberry or raspberry on it. And I'm like, no, there's like a disconnect where... So I grew up also much more in the seasons, even though it was Germany. So I always wonder, Leo and I talk about this a lot, like how much of it is specific to Chinese medicine? These kinds of themes that we, like this connection with nature or the emphasis on women's postpartum care, how much of it is special to Chinese medicine and how much of it is just traditional and how much it's actually not that Chinese medicine, how much of it is not specific to Chinese medicine, but really the outlier is our current modern biomedical way of being in the world. When you look at any traditional culture, and this is where I'm interested in your Mexican mother-in-law, like, how much do your mother and your mother-in-law and their, can you think of ways in which their care, their way of looking at the female body or taking care of you, maybe something your Mexican mother-in-law did about you or your baby that you were like, oh, wow, that's like, is there a connection? Like that?
Yes. I would say also too, like there are so many cultures around the world that really emphasize the importance of postpartum care. So for my side of the family, my mom, postpartum care in South Korea. Well, I think in general, it's like when babies are born, it's such a huge thing because their population is actually going into the negative. And so the emphasis even more now on taking care of the mother and not only focusing on the baby is so important for recovery. And I think that's what happens here a lot in the West is there's so many birth injuries that happen that really go unnoticed or just kind of, you know, that's part of birth, you know, all these birth injuries. It doesn't have to be. And so I think it really does a disservice to women that they have to live with these long time conditions from birth when there's so many practices that could be integrated to really, really care for the mothers in their full recovery because they're so central to not only the care for the children, but of the house, right? Same thing Sun Simiao says. Yeah, so in Korea with my mom, there's an emphasis on warmth. There's an emphasis on rest. There's an emphasis on nutrition. So I would say those three themes are the same with my mother-in-law. Warmth, high nutrition and lots of rest for the mother. So this is why it takes a village. This is why my mother-in-law was so present postpartum and didn't question her involvement in the care of me, in the care of, you know, her grandkids, because she knew that my recovery would be essential to the wellness of the entire family. So at the time when my kids were born, my grandma in Korea was going through a lot of health issues. So my mom was only, able to stay a few weeks with me. So I just have so much gratitude for my mother-in-law who kind of, was also there postpartum to really help me. But some traditional things were warm soups. Like in Korea, it's like the Korean seaweed soup that is kind of the cornerstone dish, the quintessential postpartum dish, which is so full of minerals and seaweed that helps to kind of cleanse the body. But then also the warmth factor and the high mineralization of the seaweed to provide such quick uptake of nutrients. And there's a lot of, not concrete scientific empirical evidence that it helps to produce a lot of breast milk. And I can attest to that. I was like, eventually I had to be like, okay, mom, I can't eat anymore. I have way too much, please. She's like, no, you have to keep eating it. So I had no lack of that. I had no troubles with, production. And I think like the names that they call postpartum, I think, is really telling. In Mexican tradition, I think it's called cuarentena. I'm probably butchering the name, but it's like quarantine, essentially. So it's like the same as they call it in China, right? It's like a quarantine of the mother so that she's protected, essentially, from the elements, from cold invasion, from not being able to rest and so forth, from other obligations. So there's just this real emphasis on deep, deep care and recovery that I think is really missing for so many women in the postpartum time. Yeah.
I have a quick question around the seaweed, because not every one of our audience is familiar with the Korean culinary tradition and the seaweed soup. So do you just make seaweed soup by itself, or is the seaweed cooked with something else?
So it's sauteed in sesame oil. Sometimes you can have meat with it, like little chunks of meat. It's usually
what kind of seaweed?
You know what? It's very long. It's not kombu. It's very soft. And so I'll have to look up what kind of seaweed, but usually you go into the Korean store and you know which one it is. But it's very long, and they come in these really long packets. It's not like a small packet.
And they're not as broad as the kombu, right? Kombu is this broad sheet.
Yeah.
While I think what you're talking about is these little wavy, thin ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, much thinner ones.
You have to soak it. So you have to rehydrate it before you actually cook it. And because they're so long, you have to kind of chop them up before you start sauteing it. So you get the seaweed, you rehydrate it, you kind of cut it up into bite-sized pieces, you warm up your pan, get your sesame oil, maybe garlic if you want it, and little pieces of meat if that's, if you're not vegetarian. And then you start to saute the seaweed, and then you just add in sesame oil, and then you add in all of the water, and then you just cook it and extract all of those nutrients from the seaweed. Yeah, it's a really simple dish, and it's really tasty. It feeds you in a way more than just your physical, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that detail, because I think that is really important.
Yeah.
Because in Chinese medicine, most seaweeds, I would say, is on more on the cooling side. So not everybody, especially postpartum women, can take the chill from the seaweed. But notice the little detail, which is to saute it in toasted sesame oil. That both the sauteing and the toasted sesame oil are warming. So it sort of balances out the coolness of the seaweed. So I just want to point out the incredible wisdom that's woven into a tradition, a food tradition from Asia or from any traditional societies. A lot of times they're not talked about because the people looking at them don't have the professional knowledge from the Chinese medicine side. So a lot of that wisdom, the incredible wisdom, I would say, is ignored or not talked about. So I just want to use this opportunity to point out the incredible amount and layers of wisdom that's woven in a simple dish.
And that's a theme that that's come up many times for us. This
beautiful.
The orally transmitted knowledge and how it connects with the professional clinical medicine. And Leo, I mean, the sort of aspect that you just brought, dietetics in Chinese medicine is, we've talked about this a few times, it's very hard to find knowledge, to find clinical, professional information on dietetics in Chinese medicine, because it's not a subject that is commonly taught in institutions. It's not being tested. It just hasn't made it into mainstream Chinese medicine clinical practice, which is a huge loss. But here you are, and you're just like, well, this is my mom's recipe. And then, you know, here's this beautiful confluence of what you learned from your mom and what your practice is telling you.
Yeah, I do feel like the kind of food medicine portion of Chinese medicine could use a lot more support, I guess, in the schools that we go to. I think it's a huge part of my practice because it's something that we do every single day. as human beings, you know, some of us eat three meals a day, you know, a lot of us. So there's that kind of empowerment piece again, is like you have so much influence in your experience through food energetics and the food choices that you make. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of our podcast, Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. As a new experiment in our season 2 on Over the Moon, because we so love these conversations, we have decided to release new episodes not only on the new moon, but from here on out on a bi-weekly schedule. So on the new and on the full moon. We'll see if we can keep it going. The full moon episodes used to just be for the members of my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, but we all feel like this information is too precious to not share it with the general public. If you enjoyed this conversation, remember to subscribe to my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of future episodes and other offerings. And if you want access to the more specialized and truly nerdy conversations that Leo and I are having in the Imperial Tutorial, please take a look at my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, which you can find at my website at happygoatproductions.com/imperialtutor. Also, Please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share our work with your friends and colleagues. And if you feel like it, continue the conversation for each episode on our Pebble in a Cosmic Pond Facebook group. Last, but definitely not least, go out there and spread some positive vibrations between heaven and earth. Goodbye.